My message today is on a more global identity, and it's harkens back to a message I gave a little while ago called The Trouble with Tribalism. Tribalism is actually one of the most powerful human instincts. We identify ourselves as members of all sorts of ethnic and national identities, our families, political parties, race, gender, social organizations. We even identify tribally based on just where we live. So, go Panthers. One study asked people whether, if they had a fatal disease, would they rather have the same diagnosis from a computer 1,000 miles away or the exact same one from a computer in their own town? A large majority preferred the same information if the source, a machine, was local. Tribalism is pervasive, and it controls a lot of our behavior, even to the point of overriding our reason. I mean, just think about the inhuman things we do in the name of tribal unity. We are essentially and quite specifically tribalistic in nature. Genocides are tribalism. We wipe out the other group to keep our group safe. Racism lets us feel that our tribe is better than their tribe. Tribalism even impacts parents who, in contact with their own children, when they dare to marry someone of a different faith or color or of the same sex. Even the denial of evolution or climate change, or other basic scientific truth is frequently rooted in tribalism. Ethnic and national identities are undoubtedly powerful human instincts. And you know, as I've already suggested, there's a strong connection between religion and ethnic and national identities. When we go back into the past far enough, and in terms of human existence, it's not really all that far, we find a time when religion and ethnicity are particularly inseparable. Almost everything was arranged around our tribes, our people, our god or gods. Every group had its own gods. Not only did they have them, but, not surprising, theirs were undoubtedly the best and the strongest of all the gods. Now, the idea wasn't so much that it would convert people from other tribes as much as it was to reinforce the superiority of their particular identity. And much of that's reflected in the Jewish texts that proclaim themselves to be a chosen people. And frequently even using this chosenness. The chosenness was used to lay claims to lands where other people lived, and not surprisingly, it would lead to massacres and war. So, as Christianity began to develop with its roots in Judaism, it's not surprising that it had to grapple with that particular issue. Its namesake, Jesus the Christ, was understood to be a teacher of love and compassion. So, how do you practice tribalism that claims superiority to all other groups while claiming to be loving and compassionate? Well, it was a struggle within Christianity in its early formation. What was Jesus' mission for the entire world or just for Jewish people? And over the first few years, the perspective of those who believed it was for the whole world ultimately won out, mostly. That was probably the key that took Christianity from a small, somewhat unrecognized movement to one of the most followed religious beliefs in the world. You see, as a mostly ethnically homogeneous tribal society gave way to multi-ethnic national states, religions that emphasized one ethnicity over the other became much less useful than they had once been. So Christianity's move towards a less ethnically driven religion proved to be more in step with their times. And that contributed greatly to to Christianity's growth. How so, you might ask? Well, the answer is pretty simple. Constantine. In all of his busyness, what with, you know, murdering political opponents and boiling his wife alive and executing his kid, Emperor Constantine found that he had need to help control his citizens. And Christianity proved out to be just what he needed. Clearly, the message of love and compassion weren't exactly his thing. Definitely not why he was so interested in it. See, the Roman Empire was pretty divided. Ethnically, culturally, politically, and religiously. The empire was functioning basically like many, many tribes, all living kind of just right on top of each other. And because of it, most of them saw no need for a centralized government. And in many ways, the only thing holding them together was the might of the Roman army. So, not surprisingly, Constantine wanted to create more unity within Rome's citizenry. And he knew that one way to do that was to give them a set of shared values. And he knew that one of the best ways to do that was with a common religion. And not only that, he knew that he wanted to use a monotheistic religion. See, monotheism insists on a strict obedience to a single source of authority. And as you can imagine, that concept appealed greatly to Constantine. And as it turned out, Christianity, with its more global outlook, was the perfect religion to use for his somewhat, well, diverse population. Not surprisingly, this move and the uprise of Christianity Christianity's uprise with it led to religion being closely tied to the state rather than tied closely to a particular ethnic group. That's the beginning of the idea in Western culture that political power and political chosenness is derived from God. So we get God bless America, one nation under God. We get people who believe that Trump was chosen by God. And we get children gathering around a flagpole to pray before school. When God is the one waving your national flag, opting out of patriotism can be seen as the height of disloyalty. And as we've seen recently, it can evoke some very strong responses. It is actually truly frightening. See, not infrequently, fascist movements are born out of an unhealthy bond between church and patriotism. The bottom line is that a close bond between church and state are seldomly healthy. Now, the good news is that in more modern times, many religions have been promoting a more global human identity. And we do still have religions doing all they can to, you know, maintain their place of power as they snuggle up to the state. But things have changed dramatically in this world. They can no longer count on a mostly ill-informed citizenry when it comes to other nations and other religions. We live in a world of fast information where a global network connects us with lots of other cultures and other pieces of knowledge in a way that's never been done before. And in this new globally connected world, the concept of full loyalty to a particular nation or a particular ethnic group should be seen as, well, somewhat anachronistic and somewhat foolish at times. That old way of seeing the world and in each other, it only slows us down and distracts us from the progress that we could be making forward towards a better world and healthier individuals. This more global identity that I'm in favor of is not merely a mixing of cultures. It's not multiculturalism exactly. What is needed is the development of new cultures. We are as free as we free ourselves from our old identities that were created around particular religions, nations, and ethnic groups. We need we need to begin developing a wider identity, that has both an appreciation of other cultures and a healthy skepticism when they don't allow a more global outlook themselves. As former Secretary of Labor Robert Reich has pointed out, over the last several decades, through technology has whittled away the underpinnings of the nation state. National economies have become so intertwined that economic security depends less on national armies than on financial transitions around the world. Global corporations play nations off of each other to get the best deal on taxes and regulations. Nations are becoming less relevant in a world where everyone and everything is interconnected. The connections, he says, the connections that matter most are again becoming more personal. Religious beliefs and affiliations, the nuances of one's own language and culture, the daily realities of class and the extension of one's family and its values are all providing people with even greater senses of identity when we lose the tribal identity that comes along with it. As I said in the message I mentioned at the beginning, the trouble with tribalism, and from what we've heard today, you can easily substitute tribalism with nationalism as you hear this. A wise, spiritually developed person is one who's aware of tribalism and resists it. While tribalism, nationalism, was once an evolutionary necessity for survival, in modern times, it is actually quite ridiculous because it is so immature and it's rooted in the illusion that some people are more valuable than other people. I guess that's that's ultimately more than just ridiculous. It's actually downright dangerous. And it's not just dangerous, it's sort of unnecessarily dangerous. You see, the origins of tribalism and likewise nationalism are very real, and at one time it was very necessary. But in the modern world, belonging to a tribe, identifying with a particular nationality, is no longer an essential life ingredient for staying alive. As a matter of fact, in modern times, tribalism, nationalism frequently has the opposite impact on life. From gangs to hate crimes and even including politically motivated anti-Muslim movements, tribalism and nationalism are costing the world lives. Healthy spiritualism recognizes the connectedness of us all. And it frequently comes with a set of standards, a set of measurements by which we can assess if we are treating the world and others in a way that fully recognizes their value and our mutual connectedness. So, the good news. The good news is this. With appropriate education, awareness, tools, we are all more than capable of eliminating negative tribalism, nationalism identities in our lives and moving to what is a healthier modern outlook, which is a more global identity.